action, and welcome everybody. This is the MP Weekly episode 247. It is 25th of April, 2024. We are recording this 2 days after the previous episode because next week I'll be actually in Orlando and we don't want to, you know, try to even find the right suitable spot to do the recording on Monday. So there's quite a lot of stuff happening next week in Orlando. Orlando, by the way, being the Microsoft 365 community conference, starts on Sunday with workshops, Monday workshops, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are the sessions. So really, really cool. Now, in the BMP Weekly, I always talk about the latest Microsoft 365 and related technologies. And then we typically always have a visitor in the house where we focus. Now, just a bit of a warning, we're not going to go through articles, the latest articles in this episode, because we just recorded the previous one. So we'll catch up quite a few announcements, which are coming up next week, then week after. So that's pretty clear, isn't it? Kind of makes sense, right,
Mark? Yes, typically always, yes.
Typically always, yes. My name is Cesar Juvenen. I'm a principal product manager for Microsoft 365 Black Community Areas. I guess that's the right way of saying that. Then co-host, Waldeck.
Hey everybody, my name is Valdek Mastikas and I am developer advocate for Microsoft 365 at Microsoft.
Excellent. I guess that's true, the intros and what's going to happen today. So who is our visitor?
Our visitor, and he is already with us in the waiting room, is Mr. Simon Hudson.
Let's actually get him right away here and we can start with a introduction. Let me try to get Simon in here. Here we go. And let's put the Simon in front. There we go. There we go. Excellent.
Hey there,
thank
guys.
You, Simon. And thank you, Simon, for joining. So let's start with the basics so we don't do the intros. Who are you? Well, the name we know already, but what do you do for living?
Well, theoretically, as I tend to crow about, I'm retired now. But for the last, I don't know, 15, 18 years, I've been an entrepreneur. I've started three companies over that period of time, all operating in various types of tech space, prior to which I was did a bunch of stuff in the medical device industry. Designed products, ran some of the biggest products as a product manager in the global market, all sorts of stuff, quality assurance. I've got a really wide and varied background, and that's probably because I'm originally a physicist. And it's hard to get jobs as a physicist unless you've got a brain the size of Stephen Hawking. So I went off and did other things. What I'm not is a developer. Yeah. You know, I haven't written any code since, I actually stopped writing code when Visual Basic 1 came out. Prior to that, I was writing, directly writing assembler against the Motorola 68000.
Wow,
so that kind of dates me really badly.
Yeah. Yeah. We recently had
a few things have changed.
Has happened. Yeah. A few things have happened after that. So it's a bit simpler. We've recently had a visitor on the show, Dan Toft, who is a cloud native. So he's basically so young that he started his developer career.
Never
in
seen
the
a
Microsoft
floppy.
Cloud. Never seen,
never
it.
Seen yes. a floppy in his life. Never wrote C#, right. I think, even.
Yeah. So it's good to have that, you know, extreme. But it also talks about the diversity of the community, right? So there's a different set of people who are MVPs. You're an MVP as well. Right, Simon.
Yes, I am. I'm in the sort of the Microsoft Office space, but actually I touch quite a few different areas, which makes it very confusing for Microsoft because they struggle to put me in a single box. But the M365 space is definitely, you know, where I sit the most comfortably. But I go and touch Purview, I do Vivery stuff, you know, I do all sorts of different things.
Yeah. Now, you said that you're retiring, but then you're saying that you do all sorts of things. What does that mean?
so my definition of retirement isn't a very good one, really. Most people sort of, you know, retire, stop working. I'm actually probably busier now than I was when I started my first company. So let's just think about what that looks like. I originally started Cloud 2, which was originally a SharePoint consultancy, and we think we developed first in the box SharePoint intranet. I can't find anyone that can claim precedent over us. So we did the first of the, you know, fully pre-configured intranet.
In which year?
We stepped out to the market.
Which version? Yes. Which version?
That's a good question. So my first contact with SharePoint, let's just do that history because that's fun. I remember it was Teams server. I wasn't actively using it, but I was using it. I wasn't actively developing it. We built the product that became Hadron using SharePoint initially 2003.
Yep. Quickly Hadron. So that is kind of with the link to your physicist background. There you go.
It goes a long way back. Absolutely right. Hadron. Yes, it was one of
the collided. It collided.
I named all of the products that we developed after, you know, my interests. SharePoint 2003 is where I really got my hands dirty. 2007, and then 2010, and then not long before I actually stepped out of that business, we'd moved that whole product set into the cloud. And we were mostly focused on the health sector in the UK. Other people made lots of money going after the commercial sector, but my interest has always been, I have a commitment to trying to make health services globally work. So I did that for them.
What does that then mean practice? Now I'm going to trail you on this one. So because again, Microsoft 365 services targeting for health sector. What are those services? Yeah. What are the products? What makes it a health specific thing?
I guess it comes in two directions. One is trying to get them to do the right things with the technology that's available to them. You know, like most public sectors in most of the world, the NHS, for example, in the UK is fairly laggy in the way that it adopts new technology. And so my view was always they need the stuff that technology can provide them. They don't really know how to do that themselves, apart from maybe around the specific clinical applications. More about that in a minute. But all the sort of the back office of productivity stuff, they never really got the focus that they needed. So we did it to them. So we developed intranets mostly, largely for content, document management, collaboration, not so much a communications intranet, which again differentiated us from many of the intranet solutions that emerged subsequently. But we were all about content management, document management, those life cycle pieces. And we helped them get their content in order.
Yeah. So technically, because you're still an MVP and you're actively following up on things, you obviously are aware that that's actually the hottest thing in SharePoint right now, considering the copilots and data and AI,
yep.
Because that's where all of the information is being stored. It's SharePoint.
Yes.
And it's actually kind of an interesting to see the cycle. It's a cycle. We all know that we've been around so with the products. And now all of a sudden, SharePoint and documents again in front and center.
Absolutely. We've seen that ebb and flow even with SharePoint. But good to see it's front and center. I mean, I'll step back from that now. But it was a great sort of 12 or so years really sort of, being at the heart of some of that, manipulating SharePoint. And again, wherever possible without using code, because that was also part of our model to make it sustainable and not in the eco-friendly way. Well, that's a different conversation. But, trying to minimize the technical debt associated with building custom solutions. One of the things that we said, look, I'm bragging now, but forgive me, I'm going to do it anyway. But when I moved into this space, I was actually working for an IT company over in York, about 40 miles, 60 kilometers from where I live. The average time to deploy an intranet at that point was 2.1 years. 2.1 years from start to end of project, which is just ridiculous. So I had this great idea that we could do it a bit quicker than that. When we started, we were doing it in 14 weeks. We got it down. I think the fastest we ever managed was 6 weeks from engagement to deployment.
Yeah.
And I had a plan to do it in 24 hours, but we never managed to quite fund that. And we could do it today with the scripting that we've got. But at the time, that was a little more technically challenging than I'd have liked. But I still think that's doable.
But when I think about it, it's not about the technology, right? It's also about the change management and training and all of that stuff, which is much more important because the best possible technical solution, but nobody can use it. Stuff like
that. Absolutely. I mean, I still do use the same model today. I'm doing a session at ECS with Nikki Chappell on governance, risk, and compliance. We've done this quite a few times, and we always make the point that to do that stuff and basically everything else right, you've got these three pillars. You've got technology, the process, and the people. And that's in ascending order of importance. People most important, processes sit in the middle. Technology is the easy part, really.
And what's interesting to see when I think, if you think about historical thing and a focus areas, and I don't, either one of you, do you agree on this, but I would say that more and more we're heading to this. Thank you, Valdek. Always there for me. we're heading to the direction where we are actually acknowledging that people first mental mindset, which is employee experience is a good example, being a trend after the pandemic, regardless of the products and all of that, but it's really putting the people first and not about the technology and IT and investments only on that area, but it's being balanced also for the people training.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't know, like, to be honest, I wouldn't say that we changed there, because like I worked in the space also like way back when, like 15 years back, and we were already saying the same thing.
Simon is 30 years back. So,
so there you go. Nothing has changed. In other words, nothing has changed. It was yeah. always, so I think we always aspire to put people first, whether that came to be or not, whether we did that and with what result, that is a difference. And also, there's also, I think the difference, like, who is the customer? Is it the ID? Is it the HR, marketing, and so forth and so on? And that is, I think, what makes truly a difference. Like, to whom you sell and who is your counterpart with the customer on the implementing side.
And I think that's the big thing which needs to change. If we're going to have this sort of employee or person-centric approach, we need to not silo the interactions via departments. You know, it can't be IT run it because it's technology-led, or it's HR run it because it's people-led. It doesn't work that way. Both of those are broken models. I mean, I always say that the two parts of the organization you should never run an intranet through are IT and comms. It needs to be led by by the business, not by any sub silo with their own missions within that, and this has been the heart of my probably actually why I became an MVP ultimately. But my interest is not in technology, not even in the people and business, but the intersection between the two. That's the bit which has always been somewhat fragile, and where I think that there's a lot to be added is let's join these pieces up and make real world solutions using the technology and the process and the people that we've got.
With that, right? So what are the odds, right, that you with your vision and idea and ambition will go to a customer, you will talk to them about interest, like, oh yeah, tech, go talk to the IT. Oh yeah, interest, go talk to the marketing. Yeah. So to what extent is business capable of understanding why they need that? Or do they very much still, embrace the thinking from the past and just redirecting to go away, go talk to the IT guys?
Oh, I think that has changed. I think I started seeing that change kicking off with the start of the cloud, which is probably quite a long time ago now, isn't it? But this mindset, you don't need to have an IT department who keep all the lights on and join the pieces of wire and polish the tin. As technology, as IT started to become a service, the role of IT in managing that, they actually became less important, which is, I think, a good thing, and let the business, whatever that really means, let the business really be able to get their arms around a bit more of it. So I think that we saw that, I was going to say stranglehold. I don't think that's fair. I think that expectation that IT are the only ones that can understand the tech and are accountable for the tech, I think that's diffused a lot. And so mostly these days when I'm talking to people, and again, I'm meant to be retired, so I shouldn't be talking to people. Anyway, when I am, mostly I'm going, right,
here we are in a podcast. Yeah. So
we're not people.
These days, I mostly talk to the business people, the owners, the execs, the people who've actually got the need. And then we get our arm around the IT people to help with the bits that they need to help with. But when we're looking at, not so much a SharePoint deployment, but configuration of SharePoint to solve a particular problem, or implementation of a team solution to solve a bit of a particular problem, that doesn't need to be an IT job. That's a business job with IT in support to do the bits that they or I can't do.
Sure.
So I think it's changed a lot.
Yeah, coming back on that change, and again, it's obvious that people first have been the statement, but if we think about is it fair to say that if you think about conferences, it's not just about the fanciest new feature in the technical thing, what happens, but we also actually have more and more business and human related tracks and sessions and all of that, which is a natural transition of this.
Yeah, I don't know which is the cause and which is the effect here, but absolutely, it's the case that, Microsoft conferences, because that's where I hang out. We have a lot more business-focused stuff. I mean, I always used to joke that Microsoft were fantastic at technology and a bit rubbish when it came to building business solutions. Sure. I don't really say that anymore, because with things like Viva coming out...
We can still improve. So let's face it, we can still improve.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you don't say that it's not because we are rubbish across the board, right? Like, you don't say it because we are good at everything.
We'll talk about the maturity model in a minute and see where we are on those different different curves. Sure. Yeah, there's always improvement to be made. But Microsoft, while I still think that there's a lot to be learned around how to do real-world implementations and to understand that big enterprises are not really structured the same as medium-sized companies, and definitely not the same as startups and micro companies. I think there's a continuum there that needs to be understood. I think Microsoft at least trying in that space, whereas if I go back to the Bill Gates days, which I do remember, it was all about the tech, and probably that was the right thing then, but it's probably not the right thing now. Great that the tech's still being done, but much more interfacing at a business level.
Would it be fair to say at least that one significant impact on this is the transition to the cloud? Because again, then you offload the technology and IT and hosting primarily to somebody else. So getting a service, the whole thing as a SaaS, as a software as a service status, you do not own that much. But still, there's technical stuff there as well.
I have another thought on that. What could actually be the reason? What about digital literacy? In the past, if you look like 20, 30 years back, we talked about what? PC in every home, on every desk. Nowadays, it's hard to imagine somebody without one of these.
Sure.
So it's more ingrained in more the way we think. And it's not really, computer thing, tech, that's IT. No, because everybody has one on them the whole day, every day.
I only partially agree. In theory, people are a lot more technically literate. However, I think it's a psychology issue. I think we can use that sort of hunters and farmers mentality, and hunters will go out and learn new stuff because that's what they do, and the farmers just expect it to be given to them. This is an unfair commentary on farmers, actually, but in terms of that sort of that psychology, that mindset of I can't do that. So yes, I know that I can use my computer at home, but this new system, I need training before I can work out how to turn it on. That I think is a mindset thing, and I don't think that will change. I think the fundamental skill set has definitely improved, but the psychology of people who are willing to roll up their sleeves and figure something out and those that won't, I don't think that that's changed at all.
Yeah. That reminds me of this, I don't know where that's coming from, and maybe they're just like weird analogy. Like basically they say, with a pigeon, you have the pigeons who like fly and don't dive, and pigeons who are, very much on the edge and like pull up at the very, very last time, right? So basically taking their seeking out the risk, the same way with folks, you have folks who stay at the fire and folks who wander and explore. Very much
and
that.
Some folks who throw themselves on the grenade. I think that's right. There are people who are willing to take risks and people who are curious, and those two things often go hand in hand, and those who are not, and those tend to be the laggards. And if we look at those classic adoption curves, you've got the laggards and the early adopters, and the early adopters are the risk takers and the curious ones, and perhaps over evangelistic. I possibly fall into that category, but probably societies need both. Although I'd much rather there weren't so many laggards. I just get cross with them ultimately.
Now, coming back on what you referenced a bit a few minutes ago, is the maturity model, and coming back on this transition or the how Microsoft is evolving, the products are evolving. There's a constant speed of innovation, which goes faster and faster and faster. There's more chains. What do we need to add? But you've been closely involved within the maturity model and documentation guidance, which is a great open source community powered initiative. Can you kind of do a quick intro? What is it, and why isn't Microsoft doing this? Just a teasing, commentary.
Okay, let's see if I can navigate that one. The first thing is, what is the we call it the maturity model for Microsoft 365. And I guess the first thing is to be really clear that this is not a technology maturity model. It's a business maturity model. It's a series of effectively documents, guidance documents, that look at what we have defined as a set of business competences. Some of it fell out of the work that Sadie Van Buren originally did around the SharePoint maturity model, but we sort of re-scoped it. But there's a set of competences, so things like collaboration, communication, business process, cognitive business, which is AI in any other word. Different things that you would say these are the principles on which businesses organize themselves or run, not departments, but you know, the underlying things about how do businesses operate. And what we've tried to do is then split each of those. Let's pick collaboration because it's easy to talk about and people mostly think they know what we mean. We'll say let's understand what great collaboration looks like. And great collaboration probably would be what we'd say is a level 400. We have a 100 to 500, five levels model, where level 400 is great, and then level 300 is adequate, level 200 is trying hard, and level 100 is what I call, when I'm being polite, the rubbish level. When I'm being polite, yeah, it's the chaotic. We don't know what we're doing. We're making it up as we go along. We're all running around putting out fires.
It's called agile.
And then there's level 500, which is better than great. That is the paragon of how it is done. So we've got this set of models that say, use the model to look at where you are now. Pick a department to begin with. You can do it at the whole organization, but we try and get quite nuanced and granular. So let's pick marketing. Let's look at how collaboration operates in marketing. Let's look at the different levels within the model, and it will give you a set of characteristics that say organizations at this level tend to do these things. And if you're mostly like level 200, you probably need to fix that. If you're mostly at level 300, well done. That's a good place to be as an operational business. If you're at level 100, you've got a problem. Stop, fix it now. And so there's this set of characteristics that you can use either in a fairly sort of high level way and go, let's look at the whole organization and think what we need to fix, or let's look at some function in our organization, decide what our strategy is or our priority is. We need to get much better at communication in marketing. That would seem like a fairly fundamental principle. Or we need to be much better at business process in operations or in IT. Let's grab that competency, look at where we think we are, look at what we're missing, and then look at the next level up, look at the gap and go, well, how do we get from where we are by doing these things at the next level up? In essence, that's what the model is about. And it's actually in a massive body of work already and still growing. But it gives you a very sort of characteristic-based framework for doing that kind of business progression. And people, as you say, it's open pools. People can just jump in, grab it, use it however they like, modify it, change it. It's in GitHub, so people can make suggested changes, and we'll take those on board. And it's a live document. As quickly as new ideas or new technologies are coming out, we're updating the models to try and reflect those. So suddenly Copilot, etc., comes out, and we go, right, we need to update the models because there's things we need to manage and consider, and there's new capabilities that need to be reflected in what those characteristics in the business are. That's why we do it.
But that's an interesting point.
That's what it is, rather. Why don't Microsoft do it? Well, because it's bloody hard. Because there's no obvious money in it, which is fair. This is about, because it's not tied to a particular technology. It leans on the technologies and goes, oh, well, we've got AI now, so we ought to talk about how can AI make collaboration better. But we're not tied to saying, and you should use Copilot for this. We're tied to say these are things that can now be done at more mature levels using anything, whether that's pen and paper, or which I don't use anymore, or technologies in their various sorts. So Microsoft kindly give us the Learn platform to mount all the publish all this stuff on, but it's for us, the community, and there's a core team of about five of us that do most of the work around this. As we try and write up these documents and then share them out into the world and help people adopt them. And when they do, we like to think it pulls through technology, but that's not the purpose. It's really about making the world a better place, which is a laudable goal.
Yes.
There's an interesting thing that I wanted to ask about, right? So you mentioned that it's about improving the business, not about the technology, right? Mm. But yet it's called Maturity Model for M365, which is a very technology oriented name.
Do you want the political answer or the real answer?
The real one.
Okay. Well, if it, since it's
we are among friends, listening, so it's okay.
The answer is we needed a platform and a set of resources to be able to do this. So calling it Maturity Model for Microsoft 365 gave us that opportunity to engage with Microsoft. They kindly share the Learn platform, and we have a presence on that. We can get this stuff out there, and basically with your help, we can do the practitioner sessions that we do on a monthly basis and use that to push the word out there. And it gives us reach that we couldn't otherwise have if we tried to do it some other means. And look, let's be honest, you know, all of us that are doing it are embedded in the Microsoft community. I think we're all MVPs now. We're embedded and committed to the community. And the technology is an important part of this. Yeah. We don't promote the Microsoft technologies overtly within the model, but they're referenced. But we couldn't do most of collaboration, communication, business, all those things. This is 21st century, we need technology to make businesses work. So of course we're going to do it, and referencing the 365 technology is actually helpful, even if it's not our raison d'etre. And equally, it prompts us to keep rethinking what we're doing. So a new feature comes out, or a change comes out to a feature we've already got, and that makes us go back, and sometimes we have to change what we recommend. Sometimes it introduces a new possibility that just didn't exist before. So 2 years ago we couldn't do any of the stuff, most of the stuff, with AI, because the AI was not sort of business accessible. It was still mainly a technology and not a not a tool.
True.
Now, so the relationship's really good, Valik. I think it's valid. I'm not sure it's the perfect branding, because I think some people go, oh, but what if I want to use Amazon? Well, actually, the reality is, use Amazon. All the rules are still true. You just substitute one piece of tech for another if it's a technology thing.
Now, is it fair to say that Maturity Model for Microsoft 365, it's kind of a framework who anybody can adapt or get it, and then as a consultant you can start using that for your customers and all of that. Now, do we know how much is it being used? So any estimates on are people interested? Is it being used? What is your thinking point on if you would approach a customer engagement, which you do every now and then, even though you're retired, are you using it or is it just for fun?
Yes, it's not just for fun. It is fun. I haven't got any hard metrics on how many people are using it. I don't really know how to get those hard metrics. One of the things we do track is how many people turn up to the practitioner sessions. And I don't know, you've probably got a better handle on it than I have, but we average maybe 30 or 40 people at every session. So I think that's not terrible. And some of those are staff working for companies who are using it in their companies. Organizations. Yep. Some of them are consultants who are then taking it out to others. So, on that basis alone, the reach has got to be hundreds of organizations. But then I hear other MVPs increasingly talking about, how they've adopted some of the maturity model or the maturity model thinking into their practice. So if you listen to someone like Agnes talking about search, well, there's a search competency, and she, when she talks, references that. So I think that the word is getting out there. It's been about 3 years or something.
Quite a few years,
But, I don't have hard metrics, but it does feel like, that it is being used more in a more wide and diffuse way than those of us in the core team are fully aware of.
And
it's very nice when people go, oh yeah, we use that.
That's the moment, and I know Waldeck has a lot of those experiences as well. CLI for Microsoft 365, and BMPJS, BMP Core, provisioning engine, whatever technical things, what have we done? You do work on open source and community stuff for years and years, and all of a sudden you start hearing that people are talking about it in that conference or in there, and you're like, I'm not even in that conference, and they're talking about my stuff. That's actually pretty cool.
So when you think about that, would it be fair to say that before level 100, there's level zero, where folks even don't know about it? They're unaware.
No.
They lack awareness.
Would not be fair to say. No, level 100 is the bottom layer. When people don't even know about it, then the chances are they don't know about it. Or the it is they probably don't know that they could do some things better.
Unaware, basically.
And so they're still at level 100.
Okay, fair enough. You cannot nothing. Go below 100.
No, 100 okay. is the rubbish level. We don't know what we're doing, and we don't know how to do anything better than what we're doing badly.
In other words, we're agile.
Yeah.
It's the agile, reactive agile, right?
Once we really kill it, every organization has bits of them. Even the great organizations, even Microsoft, will have things which are a level 100. Yep. Typically, when you do a new an innovation, you start up a new process or a new team or a new division. There's going to be stuff going on in there that's level 100. It's like we're just putting it together. We kind of know where we want to be, but we're not there, and we're going to have to figure it out on the fly. I run a Tesla Model 3, which is the best car I've ever owned. But I tell you, Tesla support in the UK for the first couple of years that we had the Tesla, they were level 100, level 200. They were all over the place. I ended up speaking to one of their senior guys, and he's like, no, I've actually reorganized the support department 4 times in the last 3 months. That's an organization that didn't know but they were trying. So they were bits 100, bits 200. I think they're now edging into 300, but they're not a robust organization.
Hold on a minute. You just said that Tesla 3 is the best car you owned. I recall a conversation we had in your Tesla last year on the way to ECS about cars. And I don't know anymore. Was it? I'm pretty sure that you said that the best car you own was either an Aston Martin or a Jag.
It's an Aston Martin.
I do
have an Aston Martin. It depends on our definition of best. Best general purpose car.
Or best looking.
Tesla.
Or best looking.
The most beautiful car.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That was it. There you go.
And thank you, Valda, for getting off horrible, boring technical stuff into things that I really love.
Yes, there you go.
I have an Aston Martin Vantage, which I spent 10 years saving for, and I think is the most beautiful car ever made, but other people may have a different view. And I have a 1972 Triumph GT6, which I think is the most beautiful car ever made. So
that's cool. That is cool.
Some people might not agree, well. And I mean, like, there is, you know, like, there are those who agree and those that don't have taste.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The people who agree with me and the people who are wrong.
Yes.
There you go. Yes.
Now, I do want to get feedback on the community and MVP and you know, the maturity model discussion, because the question we tend to always ask from MVPs and community people in the show is also like, why are you doing this for free? What drives you as a person to work in open source and community stuff for free? Because you're not getting paid, right? Isn't that waste of time and money? Because you're not benefiting out of it.
Because it's important. I mean, I guess it comes down to what drives you as an individual. So my personal ambitions have never been about money, even though that's kind of come and I bought myself some lovely toys. You know, it's never been about money. It has always been about making a difference. And that's been true. Possibly, I don't know where that came from, but, you know, it's always been true. It's like, I want to, you know, leave the world a better place than when I entered it, in as far as I can. And so I've always pursued career options and, you know, done things which have made a difference rather than made money. So sometimes I've made some money as well, but so just making it, you know, there are better ways of doing things. So I think there's a bunch of people who are motivated about that stuff, and that's probably why most of us didn't go into sales. We went into making things, whether we make it in code or we make it with wood or whatever we make it with. So no, we don't make money. However, there is a bit of a pay it forward effect here, whether we believe in that or not. You know, doing stuff that makes a difference for the right reasons for free ends up coming and being quite good for us ultimately. So I have a client I've just finished an initial engagement with, and they came to me because a decade ago I was doing the same sorts of things then as I now officially do in the community, but I was still going out and, you know, teaching people about technology and benefits and business change. And they came back to me and said, you did some great stuff to help us then, will you do this project for me now? So it goes round, even if that wasn't our motivation. I ended up getting my MVP, not because I wanted to become an MVP, but because I was doing the community stuff anyway. Simon Doy and Paul Gallagher and I, 10 years ago, started the M365 North user group, not because it was to our interest. In fact, it cost us, continues to cost us money, but because we just think it's important and we enjoy it. So we do it. And then sometimes it pays back. But even if it didn't, we'd still do it.
Yeah, because technically that makes the worth of living, right? Or at least typically that's what it means for open source people and people in a community, because that's what you kind of help other people, that you just like, okay, so this is natural, like we're built that way, and you cannot not do that. And then, as you said, yes, it will benefit for sure, because there's a lot of people who resonate with that as well, who are in the business, and then they want to build the work with you or the things what you built, and then there's a connection. So, and it's also branding and visibility as well. So,
but even if I was never going to get paid anything, and nobody ever brought me a project, and I really was retired, I'll still do this stuff because I love it. And it's fun and it's interesting, and I can get my geek on, and I get to go to exciting conferences and hang out with cool people like, well, you guys and others. So, you know, no, I love it. I know.
But that's also interesting. That's a really important part. We're kind of specking on an idea for ECS and all of that stuff. But it's one of the key points also is the peers and networking. Networking is, at least for me, I'm a Finn. Finns are pretty introverts. And technically, I'm an introvert, and I'm afraid of talking to people. This is just an act. You know, 17 years in Microsoft, I can do this. Not that I really want to do that. But it's the fact that you get to know people in the right formats. You get to know people. I didn't know Waldeck before we started our community stuff. Really, I can't even remember how we even bumped into each other. But that's part of the community open source stuff.
I recall that.
You do?
Yeah, yeah. Cool. You were at the Ignite tour in Amsterdam. I think that was it.
Oh, yes. That was Shane was there. Todd was there. Yeah, Shane Young, Todd was there. Mark Cashman was there. Yeah, I remember.
Vittorio, James Petrosky was there.
Yeah. 2012, I guess. That's pretty horrifying.
That was with the 2010, SharePoint 2010 tour, I think that was, or along these lines. Yeah, yeah.
Well, like we're getting old, but not as old as Simon, which is good.
Don't even talk about that.
Nothing like a compliment, right?
Yeah. But you know, I was involved in the SharePoint Saturday stuff. You know, basically, when I started my first company, Cloud 2, you know, I got involved in attending the conferences and occasionally doing things at those sort of, you know, small conferences, and and just gradually, you know, becoming part of that community. And initially, I guess probably I did it because I wanted to learn, needed to learn, and I thought there might be some commercial opportunities, because if I didn't win some business, I didn't feed my family or put the house mortgage through. But actually, it very quickly became a bunch of people that we just kind of knew each other and we would lean on when we needed it. And then, and the deeper into the community I got, the better it became. So, and it was actually, it was Simon Agren up in Sweden who proposed me for an MVP, because I was doing stuff. I think it was ECS. I think it was the first of the ECSs, and we were chatting, and I was doing the maturity model thing. And he went, "So how long have you been an MVP?" "Well, I'm not." "Well, you should be."
He's like, "What?" That set this straight. That is really the power that our MVPs wield. It's exactly that. Like to realize shockingly that you're not an MVP. Let's set this straight, and they do so immediately.
Yeah, and I think that it's the power of the community. But you've got to become part of the community. The more you invest in just being in that group, the more rewards you get from it, and they're not financial, but they're more valuable than money.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, definitely. That's unless, well, that, do you have any urgent things to which?
No, no urgent. I mean, we could be here for another 2 hours.
I know we could. I mean, but that was a great kind of, that's great thought leadership to you know, summarize the whole thing. But typically we end up these shows by asking what's happening next week or what's happening this week, so that people kind of understand how does how does a week for retired ex-IT person look like? And I'm sorry, Simon. I'm not really
ex-IT. He's very much immersed in it. Knee deep.
But you said that you're retired. So how does the week look like? So what kind of things do you have on your table?
So I'm also in my retired state. I'm an entrepreneur in residence at the University of Hull. So tomorrow I am involved in a half day evaluation of a innovation course that I helped them pull together. So that's you know, half of my retirement day gone. Next week, I don't know, what the heck am I doing next week? See, the problem with being allegedly retired is you start to lose track of everything.
It's almost ECS. What is the state of your talk?
Yeah, okay, well, that's a very good point. So over the next 2 weeks before ECS, Nikki and I need to finish putting together our session on governance in the age of AI. Or something to that effect. We're about halfway through that, so that needs putting together. I need to go and learn about the new Copilot capabilities for Purview, because I'm behind in my reading on that. To also get this employee experience competency that I've been working on for 6 months into the behemoth of a thing. Finished. I need to get that up and published, even if it's not perfect. I need to get that out. So that's a big chunk of work. I've got a user group session coming up. I've got a couple of blogs I need to write, because I'm way behind on that, and a bunch more Copilot related learning, because this stuff moves so fast. I don't know how people who actually have to work for a living can keep up. I really don't. So there's a bunch of self-learning.
They either don't work or they don't keep up.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much. Yep.
And then I've got a client engagement next week. So there's a small energy company, industrial energy company, only about 15 miles, 20 kilometers from where I live, that are halfway through a SharePoint migration, and they've now started to reach the bit where they need to migrate their InfoPath forms and Windows workflows. Ah. So here we are, thinking
that all of that is a matter of the past. No, it's not.
They're moving from old on-prem to shiny.
Yeah,
cloud.
Wow.
And they're pretty good.
It never stops, huh?
Yeah. So there's some stuff to do around that. So that'll probably keep me busy. So there's like 3 days work there out of my 5 days off.
There you go.
Well, something what you said there, I need to come back on that one, because that was so well put, related on the employee experiences, competence, and all of that. But something which is so fundamental, at least for me, always been as part of the open source and community, and something what we always talk about with Waldeck and the rest of the team on a daily basis, pretty much, is that anything is better than nothing. So yes, it's not ready. Yes, it's not finalized. Yes. It's something which you might want to get it out, but you know, I will get it done by 2065. You put something out which is, you know, that it's not finalized. You can clearly say that this is not the optimal thing. I will still looking into doing stuff, but anything is better than nothing, because nothing is never finalized. It's just realities of the world.
There was this very interesting quote from the guy who built the Nest thermostat. The product you aspire is the V3, but you gotta ship the V1, and you know it's gonna be a compromise. But you gotta ship a V1, because there is no V3 without V1.
Yep.
So where you want to be, where your dreams and ideas, it's there. But to get there, you gotta start here. So
I've done bunch of stuff around innovation. That minimal viable product, as we call it now, or first release, as it is in reality. It's never right, but it's good enough, barely good enough. And then we test it in marketplace, for better or for worse. We've seen that. Look, we're going to use another hour if we're not careful. But that change from the buy an IT system, use it for as long as you possibly can, sweat the asset, and then go through a massive change program to try and buy a new IT system to get better. It's just, it's always been broken. You know, the reality is that the world is constantly changing at every level. The subscription, let's just continue to do lots and lots of small updates, is just a far more sensible thing. Now, it will never be finished, because if you do a finished product, tomorrow it's out of date again. Might be only in a very small way, but it's already out of date tomorrow. So let's not do that. Let's just have an iterative model in all things. You know, I'm a scientist, you know, by training. I'm a physicist originally. And I always have to mention that for some reason. But yeah, the essence of science is it's not a done thing. You know, nothing in science is finished. Science is always about, this is the best we've got right now. Tell us what's broken, what we've missed. And I take that same mindset into running businesses and developing technology and basically everything else. It's a continuous process of improvement.
Cool.
Including improving myself somehow.
And that's actually, that's a great mindset, a healthy personal mindset as well. You know, so one step at a time. I call it ENCO OTB method, new kids on the block, step by step.
Yep.
You know, just one step at a time going towards
better self.
But it's basically, we will never be perfect. We can never be perfect. There's always mistakes, and that's just life. But then one step at a time, we can get towards a better direction. As long as it's somewhere, you know, in the lines of where you're heading, it will be good.
Absolutely.
Better than staying on.
Perfection is not a fixed state. Perfection is a temporary place we pass through before falling back and having to strive again.
True. Now, Waldeck, what are you going to do this week or next week? Just a quick recap on our side.
I'm going to, I don't know. So as we air
it's been two days since we last time.
Exactly, right? So as we record this, today we're releasing a new version of DevProxy with some new cool additions. So definitely check it out.
It's Thursday.
As this is aired, we released it a few days back. I don't know. So we have some more ideas to experiment with. Probably it's going to be more content to learn, exploring ideas around Copilot and AI, thinking about new ways, like what other problems we can solve with DevProxy simulating APIs and helping people build better apps that integrate with APIs. Because going back to the things you Simon said, it's important. It's important that, you know, that apps don't fail in production, that they never lose data, right, that a customer or a user enters, right? So this is kind of the aspiration that we've got, right? Like no broken apps because an API failed. So that's kind of the mission that we've got. So we'll be very much going through that road, exploring some more ideas.
Cool.
Vesa, what about you?
On my side, we're shipping SPFX 1.19 release candidate. It's actually out already as we're recording this, but I haven't announced anything in social media because, of course, it's on my table.
You just told everybody.
Complicated. I just told everybody. Oh my God. But yeah, social media. And then a lot of stuff is getting, or some stuff getting announced next week in Orlando. Obviously, Orlando is Microsoft 365 Community Conference next week. And then ECS followed 2 weeks after. So a lot of prepping, announcements, blog posts, catching up on things. So anyway, that's a lot of things. Now, the one thing that I almost forgot about testing is the Simon's reaction on this thing, because this is always so much fun.
Seeing yourself on your screen.
Yeah, so it's just me and my pal. So.
Yeah, you know, that's very cool. Yeah, and the head's almost exactly the same size. Obviously, my head is a little bit smaller than yours, as it should be.
Move back, Vesa. Move back. Move back a little. Move a little back. Move a little back.
Oh, that's nice.
A little more. A little more. Yes, getting better. Yes, getting better.
Yep.
There you go. Yes. You sit there the whole day.
Yeah. Okay. All good playing around with the system. So that's, by the way, the easiest way to hackle your manager or whoever you're having one-to-one, have their face behind of your back and not react on it. So just continue having discussions.
That's weird. That's got to be a finished thing. Yes. We don't do that in the Netherlands.
It is finished. It's definitely finished.
In the UK, is that a thing that you, when you meet with somebody, you put their picture in the back?
I haven't tried that, but I'm just thinking who I could put behind me just to actually continually to keep the other person off balance.
The next person you will meet with, like somebody who is nervous to talk to you. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good icebreaker. Anyway, I guess that's it for that one. So thank you, Simon, joining on the show. Really cool to have a discussion and catching up on and learn a bit about your history as well. Physicists, that's pretty cool. So, and then from that journey, it ended up in IT consulting and maturity model for Microsoft 365. Really, really cool story.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm looking forward to hanging out with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Totally. Yeah. Thank you.
And the rest of the community. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Looking forward on that one as well. So thanks everybody for joining. And we'll be back with BMP Weekly within a week or so.